Today's program was brought to you by Bonnie. Today's program was brought to you by EscapeMaker.com. Visit a farm, escape through the net. Visit EscapeMaker.com for more.
I'm Linda Palaccio, host of A Taste of the Past. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello, Greenhorns. This is Severin. This is Greenhorns Radio coming to you live from the landing of the Allemagne. She's a French warship built in France, sailed across the Atlantic to celebrate the 200th anniversary. Wait a minute now, more than 200 years. Had Lafayette sailed her over here to help us win our independence. And now she's sailing again to remind us to be bold in seeking many kinds of sovereignty. But it's very exciting because you don't always get to see a big 18th century warship coming into a small town. And there's thousands of people here. That's not the point of what we're doing today. Today we're talking about radio. Greenhorns Radio is happy to invite Tim, seaweed harvester from Cornwall, to talk with us. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Severin.
How are you doing over there?
Yeah, really well, although I have to say it's really, really very misty, and it's the midst of summer, so yeah, we could have done with a bit more sunshine today, but other than that, really well, thanks.
So the mist is an important consideration to you, because the mist is making it harder to dry seaweed, is that correct?
That is absolutely correct. The way we dry our seaweed is completely natural. We don't use any electricity. We use big polytunnels that dries the seaweed. So basically, we've got wind energy and solar energy dries the seaweed for us. But on a day like this, yeah, nothing really dries, unfortunately.
And what's your prospects for the weather coming forward?
Luckily, there's a little bit of sunshine, and we unfortunately having to build a little house that we can little room that where we can dry the seaweed in using electricity. But again, this will be solar-powered electricity. So we should be fine no matter what the weather in the future.
Let's start from the beginning. How did you get there to Cornwall to start the seaweed company? Give us your story, please.
The seaweed company? How did I start a seaweed company? I started a seaweed company about 3 years ago, and I'm doing it with my business partner, Caroline Warwick Evans. I'm originally from Holland and moved to the UK 6 years ago to study. I did my master's here in conservation and biodiversity and really liked the place, really liked Cornwall, and decided to stay down here. I set up a charity after my master's to try and conserve the rainforest in Borneo. It wasn't really making a lot of money. I was working as a waiter and as a translator to just get by, really. Then Carol came back after a stint in the Philippines and in Peru. And she wanted to come down back to Cornwall and work in renewable energy. Unfortunately, the feeding tariff for renewable energy fell through. So a lot of the companies down here, the small companies, that went bust. So she came back to Cornwall without any means really of survival and was living in a van and heard a Radio 4, BBC Radio 4 program about the health benefits of seaweed. And really that started us thinking really about what we could do with seaweed, and no one else in the UK or in England actually was doing seaweed or was selling it. So we thought, wait a second, we love the ocean, we love the coast, we love doing anything sustainable with it, why don't we start a seaweed business? And that's how we started the seaweed business 3 years ago.
Wow, so I happen to be working as a seaweed harvester this summer and did a little bit last summer. I know what it's like to go out, but many people are very intrigued about growing seaweed and how it grows, the wild and the cultivated kinds of seaweed. Could you just give a bit of a day in the life? How do you harvest? What do you harvest? What are the conditions you look for?
Absolutely. So the way that we harvest is we harvest around spring tides. And spring tides occur twice a month. When the pool of the sun and the moon is at its strongest, which means that the tides are either very high and very low. And we, of course, go out when the tides are really, really low. That means that the seaweeds are basically out of the water and we can walk towards them. Then we've got a window of about 2-3 hours, depending on the actual tide, where we cut the seaweed with scissors. Just when it's going, when the tide's going out, we cut the seaweed with scissors and leave a good part of the plant attached so they can grow back. So basically, we don't really take all the seaweeds. We give them a little haircut, allowing to, them to grow back for and for us to harvest later on. Once we got quite a lot of seaweed, in general, per person is about 26 to 36 kilos. We put it in big rucksacks and having to carry it back up the cliff, which is actually 100 meters high. So it's quite steep, but, you know, good workout. What we do then is we wash the seaweed quickly in fresh water before we put it out to dry. Once it's dry, which, depending on the sunshine, really can take between a few hours and a few days, maybe up to a week. After it's dry, what we do is, most simple thing, we put it in small bags and sell it just as it is. Or what we do is we flake it. We flake it into small flakes and powders. And then people use it as ingredients. For instance, that we've got someone that makes little crackers with it, someone that makes seaweed sausages with it. People use it as condiments, make it in little cakes. So there's loads of different things that people do with it after that. But that's basically the day of an average day of a seaweed harvester, really.
Tell me, how can you tell what is the health of your ecology there?
The health of the ecology. The whole seaweed, well, basically, seaweeds grow back very fast, and they're pretty much the fastest growing species on the planet. What we've got here is a huge array of species. We've got one of the most biodiverse ecosystems in terms of seaweed in the UK, together with Scotland. It's a very pure and undisturbed ecosystem, and the scale that we are harvesting at is very small. We've got about 1,500 species of seaweed in the UK only, and I think about 700 in Cornwall. So it's a huge variety, and we only harvest about 8 of the most abundant seaweed. Some of you might know, but seaweeds are distributed differently in the ecosystem. And you got on the shores, you've got the wracks, the bladder wrack, serrated wrack, followed by some of the green species, which is sea lettuce and gutweed. Lower down, you get kelps, different types of kelp, and then going down all very, very deep to some of the red species, like dulse and some of the more obscure ones.
Can you talk about some of the traditional uses of seaweed in the area there and around the world and how people relate to
it? Yeah, well, seaweed here in the UK or in England is had very little attention, received very little attention. Mainly around here, what it's been used for is as potash. So the farmers gather washed up seaweed and then burn it to get the minerals out of it, and then they would put it on their land. So they use it as a fertilizer. That's the main use of it in England, and pretty much the only use. As opposed to Scotland and Ireland, where you see there is a much more traditional way of using it as a food. The Scottish, for instance, they use it. They boil carrageen or Irish moss, and they make a tea out of it, which helps against the cold, and they've been drinking it for centuries. The Irish use dulse as a chewing tobacco, they use kelp in poultices, and I think it was in the First World War that soldiers were given packs of kelp to help disinfect their wounds if they were in the field. That's just the UK and Scotland and Ireland. What we see, of course, in Japan and the Far East, the seaweed's got massive significance in terms of food. It's one of the main things they eat there in terms of vegetables. And really, the West will have to step up their game, really, not just because of the health benefits that seaweed gives, but also there's more people coming on this earth, and we need to feed them all. We're running out of land, and there's still vast amounts of oceans out there that we can cultivate seaweed without having an impact on the natural environment. So seaweed will have to grow, and we have to learn how to eat it in this part of the world as well.
So that's quite an opinion. Let's talk about the role that the seaweed plays in the ecosystem, and maybe justify a little bit this opinion that the growing of seaweed can be ecologically benign. Maybe a little bit more describing what the conditions or principles are that would be behind an ecological aquaculture.
Well, first of all, seaweed takes up CO2, so it helps against climate change. Not only CO2, it will also take up nitrogen, phosphorus, which are two of the main problems, really, two of the 10 big problems of environmental problems in the world. Farmers spread manure and other fertilizers on their land, and that leaches out by rain that then ends up in the water, in the oceans, which can cause very nasty algal blooms, which are toxic for mankind, will leave large stretches of the ocean devoid of life, really, apart from the algae. So what the seaweeds can do, especially farming it, they can take up all these nutrients. If you put them downstream of a fish farm, for instance, they'll take up a load of the excrements and of the bad things that come out of the fish, and it thrives off it. So that is one thing. It will take up all the things that are bad for the oceans. Of course, not in terms of health, really, but more for the environment. But also, it provides a nursery for nursery grounds for fish. Spawning ground, it can harbor a lot of different species that you'd otherwise not find there. So it's also good for main fisheries, really.
And so what's the future for other people like you harvesting seaweed, cultivating seaweed? Tell us about the value, the economy of your operation, and what kind of opportunity there might be for other maritime professions to be engaged in this work and in stewardship of this marine resource.
I think it's got huge potential, and at the moment we are the only ones still doing it in England, and we're a small team. We started, the two of us, but we're growing fast. There's 10 of us now in our company doing it, and there's another company around that's making seaweed bath bags. And if we want to continue using the ocean in a sustainable way, well, if we just want to continue using it full stop, we'll have to start using seaweed, not just for food, for biofuel, for bioplastics, and even antibiotics. It's a huge resource that has remained largely untapped, and it can really transform the lives of coastal communities, which now rely on fisheries, fish stocks which are dwindling. If they can make that transition to sustainable seaweed farming, then I think we've got definitely a winning product here.
And who's driving that project of learning what the principles are for sustainable seaweed, studying the cultivation practices, describing best practices? Where's the energy, and how would the young agrarians who might be interested in a summer job or a winter job or a part-time job in this field learn more?
Around here, there's very little known about seaweed regrowth, regeneration, sustainable stocks, sustainable yield of natural stocks. But a huge amount of research is now undergoing in the universities in the UK. But if you want to learn a lot more, like on the academic side, there's research going on in Scotland, in Malaysia, Japan, China, even Indonesia, where it's much bigger. So if you want to learn something, then go there. What we're doing here is we've started a three-year research plan with Natural England, which is an advisory board for the environment of the government, together with the Crown Estate, who we license our seaweed patch from, and together, we are riding the wave of creating a sustainable harvesting regime, which can then be replicated by other seaweed companies. So we're really on the forefront. It's still very small, but we're on the forefront, and hopefully once we've established a sustainable regime, other people can use this too.
What do people say when they first eat the seaweed? Like, do you think that the seaweed is a gateway drug into caring and thinking more about the marine ecology? Do you see it as a transformative opportunity?
Well, I think we've got a long way to go for people to understand that. 3 years ago, when we just started the seaweed business, people walked past us and on food festivals where we're trying to sell the seaweed, and they said, "Why on earth do you want to sell seaweed? It's disgusting. It washes up on the beach. It rots. It stinks." And now we slowly see people moving towards, "Oh, actually, seaweed is quite sustainable, but it's quite good for you. It is tasty." So that is only just starting to come up after 3 years, and to get people to understand the ecology of the oceans, I think we're going to struggle doing that anytime soon. Most people don't even know where how it works on terrestrial ecosystems. Some people don't even know that milk comes from cows and that apples grow on trees. So I'd like to get there, but to be honest, I think it will be a long shot.
So what's next for you guys at the Cornish Seaweed Company? Where are you pointing your boat?
We are pointing our boat towards a still to be developed cultivation site. Hopefully, we want to keep going and sustainably harvest natural stocks. But we also see that because we're growing so fast, we don't want to have an impact on the environment. And what we want to do is establish the first seaweed farm in England for food purposes. And I think in maybe 3 years' time, we can be there and have something running.
Do you want to talk about the Tres Hombres and the meeting of land and sea in the traders?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, so we've got a few friends of us, and this is nice, very fastly growing movement of transport under sail going on here in Europe. And there's this corporation in it's called the Tres Hombres, and they sail cargo under sail, not using engines, across the oceans, across the Atlantic, across the North Sea, and transport this throughout the countries and sell chocolate, rum, and even our seaweed now as well. And it's fantastic. They can really reconnect people with the origin of their products. They can enthuse people again, because the ships they use are phenomenal. They got schooners, they're getting a frigate, I think, as well. They've got old trawlers from 1800, and they can excite people into buying sustainable, buying local, buying fairly transported products. And it's exciting. People are getting excited about it, and that's very important, because that way we can show what the real value of products and what real craftsmanship is. And hopefully, and from the looks of it, this movement is set to grow fairly rapidly around here.
Are you in a conversation with seaweed harvesters anywhere else in the world?
Apart from you, who I met in Cornwall, crazily. Very few. We're in contact with seaweed harvesters in Ireland and Scotland, and we've got a Seaweed Health Foundation, which has just been set up here. We're on an email list with people that are interested in seaweed and algae in general. But no, not that much, actually. I think we are so busy down here that we find it difficult to do anything on the periphery. But that doesn't mean that we'd like to get in touch with people and people doing the same thing. So if you know anyone, then yeah, let them get in touch.
Well, Tim, for joining us, and the Greenhorns of Land and the Greenhorns of Sea are joined as components of our ecosystem. And I think the better we get the stewardship that's inherent in our work and helping people see the value of the whole chain, not just the end part, but the whole chain, the closer we get to setting a fair price for the work and having food sovereignty. So it's nice to see you there in Falmouth, and I hope to see you again the next time round of the Tres Hombres.
Thanks, Severine. It was really good to talk to you, and all the best of luck with Greenhorn, and I hope the movement there grows very fast and more people get to know about all the great stuff that you're doing. Let the ocean be a bridge and not the divide between our two countries. Hopefully speak to you soon and see you sooner.
Thank you, everyone. Talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.